Welcome to the America's Quarterly Podcast. I'm Brian Winter. Schools in Argentina and elsewhere in Latin America remain closed, a tragedy that could reverberate for the next 50 years. What can governments do to contain the damage?
We have an enormous number of papers and studies showing the calamity that we're facing, but nobody is actually doing anything. There is no reason why we shouldn't be investing a lot of money to mitigate the impact of these school closures in Latin America and Argentina in particular.
School closures are the latest lightning rod in Argentina's COVID crisis at an incredibly difficult time when hospitals are almost at capacity. Only slightly more than 2.5% of Argentines are fully vaccinated, and the economy is still in shambles. The country's famously polarized politics have been driven even further apart by disputes over in-person learning. Schools have been closed for most of the past year, and after a brief reopening, the Alberto Fernandez government ordered the shutdown of in-person learning again in mid-April. Buenos Aires Mayor Horacio Rodriguez Larreta immediately challenged the decision, and the Supreme Court ruled in his favor, at least for now. But look, this has been a huge issue throughout Latin America, where students have already lost on average four times more days of school compared to the global average, according to a recent report by UNICEF. And it all raises several questions. What will these educational setbacks mean over time for Argentina and the rest of Latin America? What hope is there for a near-term recovery for the Argentine economy? And what's the political outlook as the country prepares for legislative elections later this year? To discuss all this, I'm joined today by Eduardo Leviati. Eduardo is the Dean of the School of Government of Universidad Torcuato Di Tella in Buenos Aires. He's also the founder and academic director of its Center for Evidence-Based Policy. Eduardo is also a member of America's Quarterly's editorial board and a frequent contributor to AQ. Eduardo, thanks so much for being with us.
It's a pleasure.
So, Eduardo, tell me, I mean, what has the national mood been like these last couple weeks with this, you know, renewed wave of cases and deaths and lockdowns? How are Argentines reacting?
First of all, is that our quarantine or lockdown, it's a little bit lighter than in 2020. And the president, at least so far, has left some degree of leeway to provinces, not to Buenos Aires City and the Buenos Aires province, as you mentioned. Now, there is another issue that I think is important to bear in mind, and that there is a very important, very heavy lockdown fatigue that makes compliance with lockdowns of the same strict very, very difficult. So, in a sense, a counterproductive measure to try and impose very rigid lockdowns, because the compliance will be too evident and the government will lose face. On top of that, there is a lack of fiscal space. You know, going into quarantine without fiscal support for firms and workers is a kind of a suicide, a political suicide, particularly in an election year. So if you put everything together, what we have is something that sounds more rhetorical than real in terms of the lockdowns. The lockdowns are being very partially complied with and really not necessarily fully enforced by the police and the military in some cases. So in a sense, it sounds stricter than it is.
So what I'm hearing, Eduardo, is almost like the worst of both worlds, because you get the political cost of a severe lockdown, but without the health benefit of people actually being able to stay inside and not spread the virus.
Yes, and you have to add to this the fact that the government has lost pretty much all of the increase in popularity that happened at the beginning of the pandemic. So you have a government without credibility, that's being highly resisted. Last year's lockdown doesn't look like it paid a lot, because at the end of the day, we are pretty much in the same situation. We have a number of, you can say, scandals related with the assignment of the limited amount of vaccines that we got hold of. So in a sense, it's like you say, the context doesn't give the government a lot of room to impose any strict lockdown, and there is a growing resistance in the runoff of a very important election.
I want to talk now, Eduardo, about schools and, you know, the issues that I raised in the introduction to the podcast. And this is a debate that Argentina is not alone in facing. It's been a problem not only throughout Latin America, but of course in the rest of the world, including here in the United States, as you know, schools and governments try to find the right balance between protecting people and also, you know, ensuring the future of these kids, as well as their present well-being, given the way that kids depend on schools for meals and their psychological well-being and so on. But, you know, it is also clear that Latin America as a whole has, you know, really lost an extraordinary amount of school days as a result of this crisis. It has been among the last to reopen. I mean, what do you see as the potential damage from this for Argentina? And is there anything that can be done starting now to ensure that this doesn't have negative consequences 20, 30, 40 years down the line?
Regarding the cost, let me tell you something. We have been commissioned to actually make an estimate. It's very hard to do, obviously, but make an estimate of the economic cost of a COVID, and that included in our computation of the loss of school days. And the numbers are huge, and based on estimates by the World Bank, for instance, I think the global cost was around 12% of the 2019 global GDP. If you move to Latin America, it's about 40% of GDP, and in Argentina, probably it's a little bit more, but let's say from 40 to 50%.
40 to 50% of GDP? I mean, that is an extraordinary number. Does that get spread out over time, or, I mean, how do you even calculate that?
Essentially, that's both the immediate and the protracted effect on, say, productivity of the current students, future workers. And that's only due to, say, last year, essentially half a year of education lost. So if you lose another year, you have to add to that. My point is that this is huge. There is no reason why we shouldn't be investing a lot of money to mitigate the impact of these school closures in Latin America and Argentina in particular. Things that can be done that we know have the desired effect are essentially investment in connectivity and tablets and teacher training to implement hybrid education in the school and also in the household. I think that may give you more effective hours. It's very difficult to catch up, but if you have sort of a more intensive school day, you know, something can be done. And also hybrid education gives something that's essentially, that's very important even in normal times. Is access to the best materials and the best classes that could be posted on the cloud so that you mitigate the inequality of education in normal times. In a sense, there are a number of things that we should have been doing before because we have had this segmentation for many years. But now the pandemic has deepened the segmentation so much that now we should be reprioritizing our education budgets to account for that and to mitigate at least partially the effect of the pandemic.
These catastrophic numbers, though, have been around now for months. And there was this one at the end of 2020 that said from UNICEF that 97% of Latin American kids were physically outside the classroom as of November 2020. And that was a number that, you know, shocked people. But the kinds of measures that you're advocating, that you're saying are necessary, like the investment in tablets and connectivity and so on, when I talk to political leaders and others about this, they sort of shrug and they say, well, yeah, these are things we have to do, but it's impossible to do it right away because of fiscal space, which, you know, is an issue you mentioned, and sort of other constraints. But what I'm hearing from you is that, like, these investments have to be done now, because if not, they're going to be far outweighed by the economic cost over time.
Absolutely. They should have been done yesterday, you know, anticipating this, because it was obvious that this was going to happen due to the pandemic. Everyone that knows something about education in Latin America should have been prepared for this. And there is no reason why we shouldn't be investing more in the hardware and also the training of education in an age in which the digital dimension will be important. I think there are some countries that actually have done that, like Uruguay, for instance. But most countries essentially, you know, stay put and complain and diagnose that the poor kids who are going to suffer more. And so we have an enormous number of papers and studies showing the calamity that we're facing, but nobody is actually doing anything. I think because, you know, children don't vote and parents typically don't care. I think that's been the history of our education failure for ages, and I think it still is. But one thing's for sure, the damage is done. And there's very little you can do to repair that. And the reopening of schools will not fix the damage. We need to do more, at least, to close partially the gap.
Given that, you know, we don't have a time machine that can take us back to March 2020, April 2020, when this all got started. I mean, if you're a policymaker sitting here now, is there anything you can do to try to make up for lost time?
Yes, you should have a plan to complement the traditional, very, very traditional, that's it's outdated way in which we teach our children with, again, more hours of school at home, with the base technology of platforms where you have access to contents. Look, this has been done at least partially in Uruguay with the Plan Ceibal. I think that's a good example. It doesn't take huge amounts of money, really. You should train teachers, I mean, to actually use this technology. Teachers should be an essential part of the of this reform. But we cannot keep doing things as we have been doing. We should be aware that you know, education should be different in the future if we want to catch up with this enormous loss.
Well, and I was going to ask about Argentina because you keep mentioning Uruguay as a positive example, but of course you're Argentine, and more than that, you're a public intellectual and well-known in Argentina. I mean, what do you think have been the main obstacles towards implementing this kind of emergency education plan in Argentina?
There are so many. I think the policy audacity to go against the flow, I think it's something, it's a pattern in Argentina. The flow would be the conventional thinking of education experts, but mainly the way in which, you know, the teacher unions think of this challenge. You know, I wouldn't dare say that the unions are the cause of our education failure, but, you know, we have to change the way the unions react. And the government didn't have the, as I say, the audacity or the will to open yet another front in this multiple battle that is associated with the pandemic. So that's one of the reasons. But then I tend to think that the education experts still don't see the depth of our problems in education, the need to adopt disruptive measures. I mean, obviously, there are a number of very few experts that are pushing for some type of reform, but typically it's like they have a cognitive dissonance that doesn't allow them to see how fast we are actually lagging behind our neighbors and Latin America lagging behind the rest of the world. So there is something that's associated with politics, but then, you know, not even the experts are there to push for the necessary reforms.
This issue, to move on to the politics of it a little bit now, I mean, it has exposed fault lines around Argentine politics that have been present for years. Everybody listening to this podcast, I'm sure, is familiar with the term La Grieta, the divide, you know, that has been used to describe Argentine politics for more than a decade now, the extreme polarization. But here, yet again, schools has been an issue that has kind of broken down along class lines, where you have the president pushing to keep everything closed. And you have the mayor, Horacio Rodriguez Larreta of Buenos Aires, who now many think could be positioning himself as a presidential candidate in the next election. I mean, how do you see the politics around this discussion? Does it help? And what does it tell us about Argentine politics as a whole?
It's interesting. You mentioned that the education issue was, you know, important across social classes, but I believe differently. I think that what happened is that the middle class actually rebelled against the new closures, in part because of their concern about their kids, and in part because they're concerned about how the kids staying at home interfere with their daily life, and particularly their working life. And that's why middle classes work in the private sector are the ones that are actually reacting, whereas, you know, sons of public officials or workers that are now, you know, inactive are less vocal regarding that issue. So we shouldn't be confused by the noise around the issue. That's not necessarily the beginning of a push for education reform, really, because, as I said, you know, it's not only school closure we have to be caring about. But it opened a story, a political story, that I think Larreta can exploit to his favor, because at the end of the day, these middle classes have been largely the losers of the past 10 years. because they are not, particularly the independent workers, they are not protected by social policies or subsidies, and they're not unionized, so they're not protected by union negotiations, so they've been essentially the ones without representation. So what we've seen is a flag or is an issue that bring together a number of people that were left without a political reference and without a specific policy towards them. So in a sense, that might be a beginning of a broader political speech, and Larreta might be, given the situation, a referent of that group and that political speech. But again, this is the beginning. I'm just speculating.
No, that's interesting. And that middle class that has done, you know, poorly over the last decade or so, as the country has kind of lurched from one crisis to another, especially in these last 5 years. What do you expect from these legislative elections later this year?
Typically, these midterm elections are very difficult to assign because they are a bunch of minor players or parties that in a presidential election are included in the big coalitions, but now they play by themselves. So it's very difficult to assign those votes to one of the two big coalitions that are essentially competing for the presidency. But I do believe, and this probably is against the intuition that the listener may be getting from the previous conversation, I do believe that the government will fare relatively well, in particularly in the province and in the Buenos Aires suburbs, which are essentially the places where informality and the lockdowns and the growing segmentation of the labor market is taking place. Because most of those voters ultimately depend on state grants and state transfers and state protection. And Kirchnerism / Peronism that is in government right now are the ones that more credibly can promise them to be protected by the state at the expense of the economy, growth, development, and probably, you know, increasing taxes. But nonetheless, they are more credible in these protective functions. At the end of the day, regardless what we see in the papers, I think the government will fare relatively well. On top of that, the opposition doesn't have really an appealing speech. Maybe the education is one that could be exploited, but they don't have appealing reference and appealing speech. So if you want to win, you need to have a competitive team, and we still don't have that.
So Eduardo, I mean, we've talked about President Fernandez, who of course will run for re-election, and it's true. I mean, look, his approval ratings are around 44% in a poll that came out in April, so he's not that low compared to some other leaders around the region. It looks like, of course, there will be a challenge from the Cambiemos coalition, whether it's from Rodríguez Larreta or another candidate. Do you see room for potentially a third candidate in this race?
There's always room. To some extent, we are part of our problems, and in particular, the lack of reforms. And that includes the Cambiemos government, which I participated in. Right? I have full disclosure here, but still, you know, the government didn't actually do that much on the reform side. The lack of reforms is due to the nature of the actors, of the players, which are typically professional politicians that are very aware of the need to win elections, and therefore typically subordinated reforms to the polls and the two-year cycle of elections we have in Argentina. And at the end of the day, they end up doing nothing because, you know, Argentina, either you run the reforms during the first 6 months or your government is essentially lost. So a third party, somebody that comes from outside, that becomes a politician, but with a different agenda, where the agency problem, this idea that a politician cares about keeping his power or her power rather than improving the country situation, which are two objectives that may or may not be aligned. And in Argentina, typically, they are not always aligned. The appearance of a third candidate, a third leader, I think might refresh the discussion, not because the leader actually may win, but because it could put pressure on the incumbents to show something different, to show something else. Now, there are names around, but those names have to play this year. It's very difficult to actually produce a candidate from the outside during the presidential election year. So if a candidate like, potential candidate like Facundo Manes, for instance, wants to be a player in 2023, then he would have to start running today. You know, the presidential race is not a sprint, it's a marathon. But Argentinian politics, I think they call for some renewal, at least some renewal in the attitude with which the politicians think of reforms. and the way they think of leading the country. We cannot make the reforms and lead the country without having another party with which we constantly negotiate. And if we want to pass pension reform, you need 2/3 of the votes, not 51%. You need to build some continuity by having in front of you another party that will not revert everything that you've done in the past 4 years when they came to power. That's essential for the private sector to actually start believing in the reforms and the new policies.
And of course, Manes is an Argentine neuroscientist who we profiled recently in America's Quarterly. But just quickly, Eduardo, I mean, when you talk about reforms, you mention the pension system. I mean, can you give me just a very quick list of kind of the other areas that you think should be priorities?
I think we should have also a labor reform that shouldn't be called labor reform, because if you say labor reform anywhere, in particular in Latin America, people think flexibilization and, you know, the lower labor participation, which is something that de facto is actually happening, because or the wage participation in output is actually coming down in many of these countries. But we need to have, let's say, complementary ways of contracting people that are not subject to this rigid standards that we have in many Latin American countries, in particularly in Argentina, because otherwise we will keep seeing something that's been a trend in the past, I would say, 15 years, which is that the share of formal employees in the private sector is coming down steadily and will come down very heavily in Argentina once we lift the ban on layoffs. And that actually is related to the pension reform, because these other guys will receive a pension after they retire, but they're not contributing to any pension fund. So in a sense, the labor reform and the pension reform are linked together very, very importantly. But also because if we don't have labor inclusion in our countries, there is no way we can fix the inequality and reduce poverty. The public sector simply doesn't have enough resources to compensate the growing poverty in our countries. So we need to put these people to work. And in order to do that, you need a number of labor non-reforms, let's call it that way. But I think these two are essential.
The backdrop against all this, of course, is the economy. And, you know, I think we published a piece from you sometime back talking about, I think the headline was, it's Groundhog Day again for the Argentine economy, saying that everything was, you know, kind of the same. And it's probably been 2 years since we published that piece, and it's still Groundhog Day. But of course, now it's even worse because of the pandemic. The economy contracted 10% last year, in part because of those lockdown measures. Inflation's around 40%. And this is all COVID related, plus the problems that have been hounding the Argentine economy, you know, for many years now. How optimistic or pessimistic are you about the next 6 to 12 months?
Not very optimistic. I don't see any plan on the part of the government to jumpstart the economy, to profit from an external context because of historically low interest rates and particularly high commodity prices that might give the government some room to maneuver. What I see are all recipes essentially based on protection, subsidies, very little credibility, which is very important in our case, because if you have a government that promises something or gives an incentive in the future to extract a reaction from the private sector, say more investment, and this promise is not credible, then you will not have investment. It's very difficult to run back policy without credibility. Same with inflation. You mention a target or an indicative goal and nobody believes you, then inflation goes anywhere. Expectations are formed elsewhere. So that's the situation as I see it. I think this year we will essentially rebound basically because of statistical carryover. So essentially, if we don't grow during the year, year over year, we'll be probably 6% higher than last year. But there's no reason why we should keep growing next year. So I don't see a bright future or anything like that, despite what might be a sort of a mild tailwind that is favoring countries like Argentina.
Yeah, I mean, as you referenced, the external environment does look somewhat favorable with soy and corn prices at around 7-year highs. But then there are those other factors that you mentioned. And then, of course, there's the uncertainty associated with the government's inability so far to reach a deal with the IMF. And I don't want to belabor the point here, but do you agree that there's unlikely to be a deal in place prior to the midterm elections later this year?
Yes, I agree with that. I would only add that the IMF will need to have a counterparty with which to arrange things that can be lent later on implemented in politics. And Guzman actually lost that, or has been losing for some time that place, because, for example, he presented a reasonable budget last year, and the budget has been already changed several times so that the fiscal deficit that the budget implicitly committed to is not going to happen, really. So in a sense, if the Minister of Economics or even the President cannot promise something and then make that happen, it's very difficult for the IMF to confidently sign on an agreement that includes all those promises. At best, after the election, probably we will have a mild plan with the IMF with very little conditionality, and the IMF actually being hoping for the government to change and maybe be able to negotiate with a new government in 2 years' time. And even if we've signed the agreement, I don't think that agreement will actually help us improve our credit rating and lower our financing costs abroad.
So more of the same on the economic side.
Yeah, I'm afraid so.
Well, listen, Eduardo, this has been a great conversation, a good overview, and wow, I mean, some really disturbing statistics and insight on the educational front as well. But we appreciate you giving us such a clear view, and thank you so much for being a guest on the podcast.
It was a pleasure to talk with you, Brian.
Thank you for listening to the America's Quarterly podcast. You can read more at americasquarterly.org. Finally, if you enjoyed the episode, please leave us a review, give us a rating, and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. The America's Quarterly podcast is produced by Brendan O'Boyle and Leonie Rawls. America's Quarterly is an independent, not-for-profit publication of America's Society and the Council of the Americas.